I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. I am hiding from my children. I don't know if they'll find me. I hope that they don't, please, because I need quiet so I can talk to you. Did you like that? Little serenade for ya. I am speaking to you from Friday evening in the garden are several 10 and 11-year-olds, for it is my 3rd son Ray's sleepover tonight. And this weekend is fun. We've got, extra kids tonight for a sleepover. And then tomorrow night, it's my newly 19-year-old son's birthday, and he's got 9 friends coming over. So, wish me luck with the whole thing, basically. How's everything been with you? I've been getting bits and bobs together today for a new music video for the 2nd single from the new album, and it's a song called Lost in the Sunshine. And it's very easy breezy. It's kind of about just a beautiful, blissful, hot, sunny day, of which those days will return. And so very exciting, I'm heading to Italy next week. I'm going to be in Rome shooting a video, which is basically lots and lots of fun, and it's with my favourite Sophie Miller again, who I've been working with for like over 20 years now, actually. So I kind of know what to expect. It's going to be lovely. And so I've been getting some clothes together for that today. And what else have I been doing this week? Last night I went to a Marie Curie event and sang for them, and that was really fun. They did really well. They raised nearly $500,000 for the charity that night, so that's brilliant. And what else have I been up to? Golly, the week's gone by in a bit of a twirl. It feels like I start Monday and I'm like, oh great, I can get loads done, and then it's blink and it's the end of the week again. But this is a bank holiday weekend, first one of 2 in succession, which is actually quite nice. Normally I get a bit grumpy about bank holidays because they feel a bit like I feel this pressure to have organised things and I normally haven't. So they're just like an extra day of lolling. Not there's anything wrong with that. But this week actually it's really good timing because it means I've got a bit of time with everybody and time to recover from these the double bill of birthday parties. Plus next weekend when I come home from my trip, it means I get an extra day back with the kids. So that all works out really well actually. I was thinking, I'm actually on the brink of quite a... Oh, by the way, I do know I need to change the intro of this blooming podcast. It says the kids' age is wrong, doesn't it? It says they're 16 months to 16, and now they're actually 4 to 19, so very out of date. But this year's actually really significant because my youngest is going to start reception in September. My 11-year-old will start secondary school, my 14-year-old will start GCSEs, and my eldest will leave school and start a foundation course. So it's all systems go, really. It's crazy, isn't it? The wheels turn. That's what happens, isn't it? And the other day I went away with the kids with my mum, and I was like, oh, this is nice. You know, for the first time in ages, really, I haven't got a little one, a very little one. You know, no bottles, no nappies, no buggies. And of course, I thought, oh, it'll all kind of calm down a bit when you haven't got a tiny baby or a toddler or whatever. But actually, it just shifts. Well, that's my experience anyway. It's not that it calms down. It just shifts into something different. I'd say the kids need me just as much as they ever did, really. It's just different things. And yeah, the emotional complexity of the bigger ones as well. It's sort of like, somehow it sometimes feels like a bit more, really. But it's lovely. And it's funny, earlier today I was walking my little ones to school, and my eldest boy, as I say, he's 19 now, and I saw him walking across the green on his way to college, and he didn't know I could see him. And I thought, golly, if I just passed him in the street, I wouldn't see him as somebody's kid. I'd see him as just him in his own right and a grown-up. And I just thought, that's crazy how that happens. In the blink of an eye, he stopped looking like someone's little boy, and now he just looks like a young man. Oh, that's what happens, isn't it? Anyway, this week I spoke to Tess Daly, which is really lovely for me. I've known Tess for quite a long time. We first met when I was a teenager, actually, or at least when I was about 20. I was young, and I was at the time having a brief and unsuccessful little chapter where I was modelling. I did a shoot and she was there, and I always remember that she was really kind to me. She didn't need to be, but she was just really warm. And you'll hear when we speak that she obviously still keeps an eye on younger girls coming into the same industry as her, because she spent a long time modelling. And her eldest two girls are exactly the same age as my eldest two boys. So that was a nice crossover. In fact, I remember, you know how it is when you have a baby and you remember who else is pregnant at the same time as you. I remember her having a baby when I had Sunny. So that was, you know, nicely joined up. And obviously we also had the Strictly Come Dancing experience of when I did the show and she was presenting. And I just think she's one of those people who've actually, when you step, but she's had such an amazingly successful career. And also she's kind of got that rare thing where she's got a regular job in live TV that's lasted, you know, a couple of decades. And those, you know, those jobs, those that having that line of work is few and far between. So it's a complete, like, hats off to her for what she's achieved, really. And good luck to Vernon for his new day job taking over at Radio 2, the Kenbury slots. He's going to be great. But yes, it was a really lovely chat with Tess, and lovely to catch up. She's got a lovely new book out, and you don't need me to tell you. She's going to tell you. So over to Tess and I, and I'll see you in a minute for the kids. How are you today, Tess?
I'm good, honey. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too. I was really looking forward to chatting to you. And thank you for sending me your beautiful book. Congratulations on another book.
Like it?
So I want to talk to you first about the book, actually, because obviously it seems health and well-being is a massive part of your life. And I wondered actually where that started for you.
Well, I've been passionate about wellness for probably my entire adult life, because it's important. And yeah, it's a real sort of hobby of mine. And that's why I was really excited about writing the book, because, you know, I'm getting to share a real passion of mine, and it's brilliant. It's like sharing the sort of four steps of wellness that have worked for me throughout my adult life. They're simple, they're easy, and I want to share them. You know, you sit down with your girlfriends and you have coffee or you meet for lunch, and you just share all the stuff that's like important to you.
Yeah.
It feels like that, you know, it feels like getting the chance to sort of share stuff that you are passionate about with other people. And that's, you know, that's a luxury. It's a treat. So yeah, it's been a blast to do it. I've really enjoyed it, the whole process.
And it made me think as well, like with having time for yourself in terms of, you know, looking after your diet, your sleep, you know, feeling relaxed, feeling healthy in yourself. Was that something you've been doing since your girls were little? Because I do think sometimes when you've got young family, that can be quite tricky, can't it?
Oh, it's so tricky. You know, I think as as women, I think we sort of tend to often not neglect ourselves, but we are last on the list of everything we have to do and everyone we've got to look after in our lives and all the responsibilities that we have and all the balls we're keeping in the air. It's sort of, you know, it feels like we're last on the list, really. So I think it's really important that we look after ourselves so that we can look after everything else that we do need to maintain and everyone else that we need to look after in our lives, you know. So it feels like, yeah, it feels like a priority for me, because I think if we're not there for ourselves, then, you know, we can't be there for anyone else, can we?
I think that's really true, actually, because I think sometimes you feel like having those moments for yourself and prioritizing yourself can feel like time when you're taking away from all the other things that are pulling on your time. But actually, if you've made that priority, then yeah, as you say, you can actually be better equipped to deal with all the other stuff that you've got to deal with.
Exactly. Because if you haven't slept enough, you're not going to feel like you're going to, you know, you're just kind of, you're not seizing the day. You're just getting through the day. If you haven't slept enough, if you haven't got the energy, if you're not looking after yourself, if you're not sort of fit enough. So that's why I talk about these four steps in the book, because for me, they are simple, easy steps that we, you know, we can incorporate into our day without too much effort.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes we might spend just, I don't know, doing an online yoga class, just moving a little bit more for fitness and flexibility, for example. That's one of my steps, is movement. And, you know, it's, if you can just spend 5 minutes in the morning, maybe 5 minutes at the end of the day as well, on yourself, you will benefit for it. And it's just all about those simple, healthy habits that we can fit into our busy lives and we can maintain them. You know, it's all quite accessible. It's not preachy. It's practical.
Yeah,
it's
definitely
like a bit of a manual. Because if we don't sort of take on habits that are easy to sustain, then we'll just let them fall by the wayside. Because anything that's difficult tends to get kicked to the curb, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Because we're too busy with everything else. So I wanted to make it sort of really accessible and just easy to follow stuff that just, you know, small steps for your health that just make you feel better.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's accessible and easy, but also really supportive. And you've also sort of given some insights into times when you've maybe felt like you were a bit depleted. And there's one bit where you spoke about when you were presenting, and this must have been when you got, so you've got now got two teenage girls, but this must have been when they were really little. And you said you went for like a 10-minute nap before you were doing Strictly. And then you actually sort of ended up having this big knock on the door, like, it's time to go down to the studio floor.
I mean, that was the biggest sort of period of sleep deprivation in my life, becoming a new parent. I'm sure parents can relate. New babies in particular aren't that fond of sleep. Phoebe, who is now 18, she didn't sleep sort of for the first 3.5 years of her life. And I had to go back to her. She just didn't want to sleep. She just wanted to wake up and socialise and all night. So I remember I had to go back to work sort of 6 weeks after she was born. And yeah, I was just so tired from waking up 3 or 4 times a night when you've got that awful broken sleep. And I was in my 30s then, but it was still tough. You know what I mean? I had a lot of energy, but even so, if your sleep is broken 3 or 4 times a night, it's brutal. It's like torture, isn't it?
It's the worst. And all you think about when you wake up is that, all the things you've got to do that day that are going to be that much harder.
Things you've got to do. It's like the to-do list is so daunting when you haven't slept, isn't it? And you're just trying to get through the day, counting the hours down until you can try and get some precious sleep again. And I remember, going back to work after 6 weeks. And it was tough, you know. You're like breastfeeding and you're pumping, expressing the milk, so you're not going to lick. I mean, it was all that's going on. And just not having slept enough. So, yeah, I remember once being in my dressing room, being really tired, lying down and just sort of falling asleep. And then next thing you know, oh, you're on. Knock, knock, knock. You do it because you've got to, thank goodness for sort of live television, because the adrenaline of that is like rocket fuel. It's wonderful. It gets you through everything. I'm sure you know that from performing. You know, it's like that that adrenaline, it is your friend. It gets you through everything.
Definitely.
But that was rough. And going through that sleep deprivation as a parent, it just makes, you know, you realise I cannot function like that again.
Yeah.
Because it was really, really tough. So sleep, I think, is just so important. Most of us aren't getting enough. quality sleep is really important, because, you know, it's where we reset ourselves, we recharge ourselves. It's how, you know, our immune is affected with a lack of sleep. Mm-hmm. Our well-being, our skin is affected, you know, it's sort of, it affects everything. So yeah, I think it's super, super important. So I have a lovely little sleep routine now that helps. We talk about sleep in the book. I talk to a sleep expert who knows the science behind sleep, Linnea Patel. She's very clever lady, and so she sort of sleep trains athletes and all sorts of people, NHS workers, and yeah, she's brilliant. So there's lots of brilliant sleeping tips in there, because sleep is everything.
It is,
when you've been without it.
Yes, and I was thinking that maybe, so both your girls are teenage, and actually I realized, I think I already knew this in the back of my head, but my eldest two and your children are born exactly the same time. So 2004,
oh, really?
2009. Yeah.
Yes.
So identical.
Yeah.
And firstly, it's quite exciting, isn't it, when they get older? And
I know.
It's funny how
driving, unis, all that is...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's funny how it morphs, because I don't know about you, but I think when you're first introduced to the world of parenting, you know, that bit of when they're little, I mean, it's incredibly busy and visceral and... intense with all the things you've got to do. But I actually think the bit when they're older is so complex, and they still need you as much, but you've got to sort of navigate this new relationship where they're mm-hmm. evolving to, and also where you are as well, and keep it all in the present tense. So it's not all like, well, I babied you like this, and that's how I remember you being really sweet at that age, and then you sort of lose the threads of where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you
mm-hmm.
find it having your girls growing up?
Yeah, it's like a minefield having to negotiate like how to do that properly, because you can't be too preachy with them, because then they're just going to naturally back away from that. It has to feel like they're, you know, they're reaching their own decisions in life, and you just need to advise them and sort of guide the way gently, subtly. But yeah, I totally agree with you that it is like you're almost needed more, isn't it, as they get older, because they, you know, they need more life advice. They need more. There just seems to be more kind of, I don't know, there seems to be sort of more mental hand-holding, really, if you like. And it's just, yeah, it's amazing, really, how much you are needed as they get older. And so it's a learning curve, I think, as you go through it. You know, every new stage in their teenage life is a learning curve. And we were joking, Amber now is, she's 13, and we were joking when she turned 13 that she was probably going to start snapping at us, because she was the world's most ethereal. Like, her nickname was the Little Buddha. You know, she just cradles babies and small dogs and, you know, is often picking flowers. She's very ethereal, very sweet. And we were like, Amber, you won't ever start snapping, will you, when you turn into a terrible teen? And yeah, the other day she was snapping at us, and we laughed at her, and she just stopped and laughed at herself, because she realised it's just the hormones, it's just the way it is. And so yeah, we've got great relationships with our girls, and they are brilliant girls. But we learn as we go, like everybody else on that, you know, on that parenting journey, because every step is a new step. When your child starts to drive, oh, that's a whole new minefield. You know, I'm like, I've got the app Life 360, and I track Phoebe on it, literally track her, like, not obsessively, till she gets to her destination, because she's a new driver. And the relief when I see she's reached there. So yeah, you never stop, do you? You never stop parenting. I mean, honestly,
no.
I don't know when that kind of like all seeing eye ends. Is it when they move away from home? I'll still be worrying.
Oh my
but
goodness.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Me
and you
too.
Wouldn't change it for the world.
No, you wouldn't. And you kind of understand, don't you, suddenly, like, the dynamic of how our parents must feel about us as we were growing up. And
yes.
Yeah, I put my parents through a lot, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, and there was no Life 360.
No, exactly. I mean, there was
there
nothing.
Was just, oh, she's still not home.
Going
out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, there was no way of finding where we were at that point. There weren't even mobile phones.
I know. And actually, I think the last time I saw you, we were having a bit of a chat about your teenage years and how that was the time when you were actually travelling the globe and with your modelling career, going off and having all these independent, you know, independent travel, staying away.
Yeah.
I mean, how formative is that experience?
That was, I mean, it was wild. I remember I was 17 and I was living in Tokyo for a few months, and like I said, there were no mobile phones in, so I literally had to arrange with my parents that I would be in my apartment in Tokyo on Thursday night at 7 with the time difference. We had like a 2-hour window when they could call me, and I had to be there no matter what, because I had to be on the other end of the phone because there were no mobile phones. I mean, they lit like that one, and I had to wait all week and think, Thursday, I've got to be in at 7 because that's when they're going to call me. So it was different then. Yeah, I'd get on like bullet trains and nobody would speak English. The signs would be in Japanese. And the only way I could time my journey and know when I was getting off the stop, because the stops would be in Japanese,
of course,
the stations, was I'd set an alarm clock. I'd have a little alarm clock in my back and I'd set it, because those bullet trains in Japan were famously always on time. So I'd set it, 10:30, we arrive. Osaka, for example, I'd get on a bullet train and we go there and I'd set my alarm. And that's when I'd get off at that stop, hoping it was on time.
Wow.
Because there was no way. So, yeah, you were really on your own at that point. It was just, I'd never travelled abroad. I'd only, you know, I'd never eaten sort of foreign food, never mind raw fish, sushi. So it was a big learning curve, and travelling the world at that, sort of between the ages 17, 18, 19, I lived in Paris and in Madrid, Barcelona, Tokyo. And it was just, it was amazing, because I'd never really travelled. And it was such a brilliant cultural experience, soaking all that up and living as a local, not as a tourist. And that life experience was, it was, oh, it was amazing, I think. I mean, it really sort of taught me a lot about people. I met some wonderful friends I'm still friends with today, and just meeting people from different cultures. And yeah, it was, I wouldn't change that for the world, actually. It was brilliant.
I suppose it's an interesting, and I think it's just the way that modern life is now, that you've got, on the one hand, you travelling around in Tokyo trying to time your journeys and hoping you're at spot, versus watching Phoebe drive to her destination.
I know. She's only going 20 minutes. I'm a nervous wreck. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is, but
it's so ridiculous.
You know, if our parents could have tracked us around.
Loosen the leash.
Well, if your mum could have tracked you in Tokyo, seeing the little dots. Oh, she's reached Osaka.
She probably would. She's there.
So I was thinking, actually, I don't know if there are many parallels, really, but I was thinking, it's funny, because I grew up with my parents both working in TV and my mum doing live TV when I was little. And I thought, I wonder what your, because I didn't really realise until I was looking properly at the dates, that your experience of presenting Strictly is pretty much exactly the same time you've been a parent, right? So what was happening when you had Phoebe? Was that when you've, so was she born when you started?
It was series, I was pregnant with her series one, and then had her between series one and two.
Wow.
So, it's always been there for her. It's always been there. She was in the womb, and the Strictly theme tune is playing.
I wonder what she's like me with the Blue Peter theme. Just like, wonder what the association is for her with that theme.
I wonder
if she had a moment where she's like, oh, not everybody's mum is doing that at the weekend.
Yeah, that's, I know, it's funny.
Yes.
I remember when she was little and I would be at work and she'd watch with her dad, and she used to point at the telly and go, why is mummy in that box? Why is she so little? Why can't I see her? She's little in that box. That was when she was very young, obviously. But, I guess for you as well, I suppose it's just what you do, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's just normal.
Very much so.
Really.
It's normal.
That you've lived with.
It's normal, because, and then you realise it's not what everybody's doing, but then you sort of recalibrate. Because there was a time where my mum's job it was like really brilliant currency in the playground, and I would definitely exploit that aspect. Sometimes literally, like selling Blue Peter badges, but sometimes more metaphorically, like, you know, finding it kind of, I don't know, made some social things a bit different for me. Like, I literally would introduce myself by saying, I'm Sophie and my mum presents Blue Peter. But I'm not saying your children would be as crass as that.
That must be cool. Blue Peter. It's pretty cool.
It would make people like be a little bit more open to chatting to me. So I would use that. But then
If you give me a badge, we are BFFs.
But I think for you in being in broadcast, I was thinking there's very few jobs in live telly that have got such longevity, and it's a little bit of a holy grail. And I think also not only have you had this brilliant prime time, you know, well-loved show for a long time, but also I think it being live makes a massive difference. Because I think live telly is the best because it starts at a certain time, finishes, and as you say, you've got that adrenaline. But for you as a host, what is something that is going through your head that maybe people at home wouldn't understand is what you're juggling?
Well, I love live TV because you can't fake it. It's so real.
Mm.
It only happens once. And nobody can say, can we just, there was a plane flying over. We picked it up in sound. Can we just say, can we do that whole conversation again, please? And when you, you know, when you have to do it again, you never get that same moment twice. So I love live television for that reason. Everything is happening in real time and it's absolutely genuine. Mm. It's not contrived. It is real emotion. Anything could happen.
Yeah.
Often does. So for me, I love that. I love the adrenaline because it just puts me right in the moment, in the flow. And anything that puts me in the moment, I love because, you know, obviously we're always so bombarded with everything outside of us all the time, you know. We're at the mercy of our phones that are constantly demanding our attention. Everything's demanding attention. So when you are in that, you're forced to be in that moment. I remember as a composer talking about this moment, being in the flow.
Mm.
It's like that live moment demands that you are absolutely there. And so it's like almost like not meditative, but it's brilliant. It's brilliant for just focusing you completely. So, yeah, I really enjoy it for that reason because it demands complete focus. Which is rare in our lives because we're always multitasking, aren't we?
Yes.
I mean, I say that, but I'm still multitasking because someone's talking in my ear.
What now?
Saying, okay, let's move on.
I thought you meant now. It's like, wow.
Oh, no, not now.
You're during the telly. Yeah,
that's just
enough.
You, honey. Yes, so I enjoy it for that reason. That it just sort of, yeah, it demands that focus. And I love it when you sort of have to be right there in the moment because that's, kind of, after all, that's where the joy is, isn't it?
You know what, I totally...
If you could only be in the moment more often.
Well, I think there is a privilege in that, actually, and I don't think everybody gets to experience that with their work. And I think that thing, as you say, of being totally focused, I think there is a meditation in it. And I think particularly if you're someone that maybe is not very good at... Like for me, like the actual mindfulness is not something that I've ever been able to access, but then I realised that maybe I've got other ways of doing the same thing to my brain in a different way. Because when I go on stage or if I'm doing something live, that thing of just letting everything drop and you're just in that moment is really crucial to my well-being. I really understand that.
It's special, isn't it?
It is special.
And that's why, for me, I've been trying to meditate for you know, on many different occasions. And there are moments when I think, I'm nearly there. And then you think, I'm thinking, I'm nearly there. So I'm not there because I'm still thinking and I can't stop the thoughts. Because it's so difficult, isn't it, to stop those thoughts.
So difficult.
And you know, that's why breathing, I've got one of the four steps in my book is breath. Breathing, because conscious breathing, now this has been a game changer for me. It is so simple to do and to access, and it is almost meditative because it puts you in that moment with minimal effort. You don't have to stop the thoughts because you can count, you can close your eyes, but you can count your inhalation, count on the in-breath, on the inhalation, close your eyes. For example, count to three on the inhalation and then count again, maybe a little bit slower, maybe to four or five on the exhalation. So you're breathing in, you're breathing out, you're counting how long it takes for you to inhale, how long it takes you to exhale. And if you do that sort of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times, you are in the moment. Your mind is calmed because you are counting on your breath. You're thinking about your breath. You're totally focused on that. Your thoughts are not wandering, and it calms your mind. It calms your system. Your whole body sort of just calms. You know, it calms those spiky cortisol hormones and all those stress hormones. You can use it to put yourself in the moment and calm yourself in moments of stress. I do. You could at night. I use it as sort of as a sleep tool to help me just wind down and stop the to-do list playing for tomorrow. Instead, concentrate on the breath. And I just concentrate, you know, I just count the breath, count on the inhale, count on the exhale. And it is absolutely brilliant. I swear, within a couple of minutes, you are centered. And for me, it works as a real mindfulness tool. I cannot recommend it highly enough. And it's free. It's easy to access. We all do it. We all breathe. But we're not very conscious of how we do it, you know. And so there's a whole section about breath in the book because I think it's so interesting how we breathe as well, whether we breathe sort of nasally at night, we breathe through our mouths. And there's so many interesting facts about nose breathing versus mouth breathing, for example. And I worked with a wonderful breath expert, Rebecca Dennis. She's a best-selling author. She runs breath workshops. And we worked together, and she just sort of taught me about the benefits of nasal breathing over mouth breathing. And, you know, you breathe through your mouth at night, for example, you might have a cold and you wake up and you've got a dry throat and a dry mouth, and you've been breathing through your mouth, but your skin is also really dry. I'm at an age now, I can see that and it's because we lose like something like 40% more water we from our bodies through breathing through our mouth at night. It really dehydrates us. 40%, we'll lose 40% water breathing through our mouths. So therefore it dehydrates us. It's not, our skin looks terrible as a result. We are dehydrated. Our nose has not filtered the air we breathe, which is more beneficial for us because we've been breathing through the mouth. It hasn't filtered, you know, the bacteria, the viruses in the air. We might be snoring more. We've had a less restful sleep just by breathing through the mouth. So it's just really interesting, like breath as this whole kind of like brilliance. Like it's like a super tool we've got inside of ourselves that we don't use very much. So yeah,
I completely agree.
It's really interesting.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And it can actually flip the script as well of how you're feeling and how much control you feel and how centered you are.
Exactly.
As you say, exactly. In stressful situations. And I
think... Yeah, even if you're just driving, you know, you can sort of breathe in, breathe out a little bit, and just put yourself in the moment with that, with your breath.
Yeah,
because, you know, sometimes we just need to just get back into the moment because everything is bombarding us quite a lot, isn't it?
Yes.
Usually.
And actually for kids as well, it's, I think that's something that people are equipping children with, mm-hmm. better now, is how to center, yeah. themselves in that way. And it's a really powerful tool, as you say, if helping with sleep. But I know that breathing is something you can actually, it sounds ridiculous, but you can completely sort of take for granted how you breathe and actually not even think of it. If things are escalating, you can sort of forget and get into bad habits without actually,
yeah,
checking yourself.
True.
Am I getting enough oxygen? Am I taking, mm-hmm. proper deep breaths? Because when,
exactly.
you start to, you can easily just do very shallow breathing and then get very panicked.
Mm-hmm. Most of us do from,
yeah.
the chest when we're like stressed. We breathe shallowly. And there's also that kind of like, we stop breathing. Like, it's like, have you heard of email apnea? When people are emailing, I know I'm guilty of this,
mm-hmm.
and you're typing, and then you realize that you're sort of holding your breath.
Oh, yeah.
Until you hit send. I bet you've done it. I bet you've done it. Just notice next time you're sending an email, and I bet you notice you'll hold your breath. We do it. We do it when there's a demand on our time and we're doing a task, mm-hmm. and we tend to sometimes hold our breath, and it isn't good for us. It is not good for us. We are breathing too shallowly from our chest. We should be doing it from our diaphragm, from our gut. Mm-hmm. Better for us, much more efficient. And we are guilty of holding our breath way too often. And again, it's not good for us.
Yeah.
I think it's the busyness. I think it's busyness in our lives that makes us do it. You know, we sort of tend to hold our breath until we've completed another task. You know, not for duration, obviously, but you will notice that you have moments of just holding your breath.
Yeah. And actually, years ago, I used to have panic attacks when I was sort of in my early 20s. And I went to see a hypnotherapist. And one of the things that was really good for me was learning how to control my breathing when I could feel myself starting to wobble. And it's something that I've carried with me to this day. And if someone's starting to panic a bit, if you try and do three times the exhalation for your inhalation, it just starts to regulate your oxygen and it really calms you down.
So you make the exhalation last three times longer, do you mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just so you're... Right. Because when you're panicking, you start to hyperventilate and you're breathing quicker, and that's what can make you get too much oxygen, and you'll get, that's when you get that sort of like feeling a bit lightheaded and like you're moving a bit out of sync with what's going on around you. So if you can just regulate your breathing, you can often ground yourself again, because it's that sort of fight or flight action, but without anything you're actually fleeing. So your body's doing what it thinks it needs to do, but actually if you're not actually panic, if there's nothing that's immediate, you know, there's not a dinosaur about to get you, not a dinosaur, like, you know what I mean? Like, let's say something, like a saber-toothed tiger, it would have been, I guess. Then, you know, you're not, if you're not actually fleeing that, or a fire, let's pick something a bit more realistic for now. then it's like your body goes into that action, but you don't need to if you're just having a panic attack. Mm-hmm. That's, you've just got a kind of, whatever is the bit.
And it's just useful having that as a tool, you know. Mm. It's useful having something so you can just nip it in the, you know, you can just nip it in the bun, just stop it from escalating.
Yes.
And just ground yourself and know that you are in control of those thoughts.
Yes.
You're
the boss. When we're talking about feeling a heightened sense of panic, and I would say that when I did Strictly, I found it, I still regard it as the most terrifying thing I've ever done.
And no way.
I remember
and
at one
brilliant.
Point, oh, it's so scary. And there's one point halfway through, I said to my manager, do you realise quite how terrifying this is? And he said something to me like, but what a privilege. What a privilege to experience.
You're not doing it, love.
privilege.
It's terrifying. It's so brave, though. You know, I think you're so brave because, you've stood up in front of audiences before and you sing in front of thousands of people, but putting yourself out there, you know, when you're doing something that's kind of out of your comfort zone and you know, you've got 90 seconds live to impress. What if you forget your steps? What if you don't?
Exactly.
What if you fall over? You know, you can't do it again. And that would be where the terror like lay for it. I totally get it. It's so brave.
It must be funny.
Did you enjoy it a little bit?
I loved loads of it. But it must be funny for you when you see people that you know and they're in that state.
Yeah.
You're just like,
I know.
Sorry.
I just want to stroke them and feed them sweet, rub their back, and it'll be okay, I promise. You'll be brilliant. But I get the terror. I did it once myself for Children in Need with Anton. We danced for Children in Need live, and honestly, I've never known terror like it. My mouth was completely dry. And then I understood why people, you know, they always come over to me and they're like, their lips
you can't
are
get your teeth down. Like, you can't close your mouth anymore
because
your teeth are gone dry.
Because their mouth is dry, pure terror and nerves. And I totally got it. I was like, you are so brave. Oh my goodness, I have a whole new respect now for every celebrity who takes part.
It never gets normal.
But
as
you
well.
Were brilliant and a natural dancer.
Oh, thanks,
so
thank you
were fab. Yeah.
Well, if we can go back to your lovely girls, did you always want to be a mum? Was that something that was always important to you?
Do you know, I always sort of, there was a, you know, I had that sort of subconscious feeling that I would always be a mum, but I wasn't one of those people who planned it. You know, I didn't see sort of little cute girly dresses and think, one day when I'm a mum, I'll dress my child in that. I never thought that really. It sort of took, for me, it took meeting the right person, which was Vernon. I met him and I thought, oh, suddenly, you know, I can see it. I can see children. It sort of felt like, it hadn't felt like the right time. And I've been, I don't know if that was just because I was being selfish, living all over the world and traveling, working in the fashion industry. And it was never the right time because I was never settled. in the right place with the right person. And then I met him and it suddenly felt like, okay, this is, and biologically, I think I was like 31 then. So my clock was probably going tick, tick, you better find someone. Subconsciously again, you know, I wasn't even thinking about that consciously, but it just, yeah. So I don't know. I never planned being a mum, but I guess I thought I thought I would be one day.
Yes.
We never feel ready for that, do we, really? I mean, I don't know. But then it happens and then it's the perfect time. Never seems like the perfect time, but then when it does happen, it sort of is.
Yeah, I know. And I think meeting the right person can be that thing where it's like, I want to have babies with you, actually.
Yes.
And how
many have you got, Sophie? Four?
I've got five.
Five?
Yeah.
God, you are amazing.
It's enthusiastic, isn't it?
Five. From ages 18 to...
Yeah, so Sonny's going to be 19 next month. And 19? Then the little one. Yeah, and then my little one is four. He turned four in January.
Oh, amazing.
So it's quite a lot.
Yeah, that's 20 years of indoor play centres and parks.
Yeah, and nurseries. Congrats. And all of that stuff. And it's just quite crazy. But I quite like the juxtaposition of having the old and young sometimes, because Sonny did his first driving lesson the same week that Mickey started nursery, and I quite enjoy sometimes it's quite clunky, but I like it. I like the spread.
Yeah. And it can be a brilliant help for you because you've got the perfect babysitter.
Well, that's
Big Brother.
The theory. It hasn't manifested as much as I imagined. Yeah. But that's the theory.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But when I had my third, so you said you were 31 when you met Vernon had your baby?
I think I was 31 when I met him, yeah.
So I had my third when I was, I think, 32, 33, and I would say that's the first time I was actually broody, which sounds odd because I'd wanted to have the other two, but I didn't experience that biological clock until that time. That was when I was like, I could feel almost like a shift in my brain, and it became like all my thoughts kept going to that. And I was like, why do I keep doing that? It was almost a little bit annoying. It's like you kind of all thoughts keep going towards
you'd see strangest babies and go, I'm lactating.
Yeah, exactly. And so did it always seem to you like, when I've had my babies I'm going to keep working? I mean, I get from you such a strong work ethic.
I mean I never thought about not working, really, but then I would envy. But yeah, I remember ever being friends who sort of had a whole year off maternity leave, and I'd think, oh, you're so lucky if you don't sleep tonight. It's okay because you don't have to go to work. But obviously, you know, they have different challenges, and, you know, they probably thought perhaps I was lucky going to work. But it's just juggling and balancing it all, really, isn't it, that we're always striving to do. I didn't think about not working because, you know, work was sort of, I enjoyed it and I needed to work, and I had a mortgage to pay, and It was also I enjoy work, you know, it's sort of one of those things that define me, and I've worked hard to get the work that I have and had at that time. And so, yeah, I didn't really think about giving it up because it was just something that I enjoyed. But, you know, I probably would have worked more had I not been a mother, without a doubt, because I, you know, I just didn't want to miss out on all those lovely first moments that you have when you're a mum as well. Like, I don't know whether it's the first PE day, the first sports day, the first, you know, whatever it is, and harvest festival, all those things. I just, carol service, and they're doing a speech, and I couldn't not be there for that. So I probably did work less because, you know, being a parent does demand that, something that you are around. And so it was, it's just been juggling that ever since, really, juggling the work with the parenting and trying to make it all work.
Yeah.
Trying to show my girls that you can be a mother and you can work, and, you know, you're trying to have it all. You're really trying. But you do your best. Yeah, you do your best and try and make it work.
And what about your parents? Did your mum work as well?
My mum did work, yeah. She worked into, I think, until retirement age, into the 60s. And she made it work, even when she'd sort of come home on her work break and sometimes give us sort of lunch at home. She always made it work, actually, and just got on with it. And kind of made it look easy, I suppose. I'm sure it wasn't easy, but she didn't complain. And I guess that, you know, that we live what we learn, don't we?
Definitely.
So whatever our parents do and that is the norm for us, then I guess we tend to repeat those patterns ourselves.
Yeah, and also it helps give you permission sometimes to have the time for your work and to raise your kids and to feel like it's okay, you know, this is the family of life I came from too, and I have good relationships, mm-hmm. or, you know, I worked out all right, or whatever it may be, you know, it can kind of help. Yeah. I know I take a lot from my childhood and how my mum worked. It definitely, mm-hmm. I don't think I would have been as brave, actually, if I hadn't had that ahead of me. I don't think I could have been someone to maybe necessarily be that brave about cutting a new path if I hadn't had that example.
I think that's brilliant as well. I think that's one of the greatest things we can sort of give to our children is that kind of, you know, teach them to know that they, you know, not only their self-worth, but the power to chase their dreams, and that, you know, it is possible.
Yeah.
Whatever they want to do, it is possible. Make them feel, you know, that possibility. And if we sort of live it ourselves and sort of, I don't know, we just go for it and get on with it and just show them that you too can do this. You are capable, and you know, everything's possible. You just got to put your mind to it. And I think that is a real gift, actually, that parents can pass on to the kids.
Definitely. And can we have a little minute to talk about your lovely dad? Because he came up in so many of the interviews when I was researching you. And I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, it must have been so extraordinary for you that he died so soon after you got married.
I know. And I did. He walked me down the aisle, and he was determined. He was sick at that point, but he was absolutely determined to make it to our wedding and walk me down the aisle. And he did. And then he died while we were on honeymoon about 13 days later. And that was, oh gosh, yeah, that was awful. But, you know, I'm great because he was such a brilliant dad. And my greatest regret in life is that he was not around to meet his grandchildren, because, you know, he would have adored them. And I really, I just wish they could have met their granddad, because he's such a brilliant man. But obviously, you know, it's what it teaches when we lose someone who has always been, you know, someone who is just such an integral part of our lives. It's just we take for granted, but they are one of our very pillars of existence. When that pillar is removed and they're gone, and it's just so final, and you've never experienced that before, because up until that point, I'd lost grandparents, but, you know, losing a parent was whole new, like, oh, it was just, it's huge. It pulls the rug from under your feet, and you can't believe they've gone.
No.
And, but what it does teach you is to really value, you know, life, and that it is temporary, and that we really have to seize it, because, and we have to enjoy every moment. Because my dad used to always say to me, you know, we're here for a good time, love, not a long time, and we're a long time dead. And that's not to sound morbid, but he, you know, he used to say it jovially with a joke, a laugh and a joke, because he was always full of fun with a great sense of humour. But, you know, it stuck with me because it's true, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
We don't know what's around the corner, any of us. And so what it taught me losing a parent was that, you know, you've really got to appreciate now, because none of us is forever, and we've got to make the most of every moment. And just, it taught me gratitude, really, more sort of gratitude for what, you know, for the gift of life that we take for granted. But when you lose someone, suddenly you realise, actually, it's not forever. It's not, you know, none of us are eternal. And so we might as well have a good time while we're here.
That's true. And also, I think I'm sorry you lost your dad then. I think losing a parent is huge. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we know one day it'll happen. And then when it does, it's just like, it's like everything stops for a while. And I just think the continuation of, just because they're gone doesn't mean that you stop loving them. And actually that legacy of love has become something that is informed where you're at now. And even though your girls didn't meet him, there will be a continuation of what he put in all around you that becomes part of their present. And I think that legacy of the love that is created in that relationship is really significant. I think that's like the best thing that can come out of that, the grief you feel,
so true,
is actually the continuation of that love.
Yeah, and that's what you find reassuring, actually, and that's what keeps you smiling, the memory of them, you know, and everything that they gave you and all the gifts that they left that you didn't realize at the time that you were learning from them, and what they, you know, what they sacrificed, what they gave you, what you look, it's just, yeah, it's just, it teaches you all of that, you know, and it sort of reaffirms all of those things that you've took, you know, you might have taken for granted, but actually, no, they're gifts, and we've got to be grateful for them.
And also, if you say he's got a good sense of fun, that's maybe part of the childhood that your kids have had as well. So there's like ways that the strands continue, you know.
It's still their granddad, isn't it? It makes up building, but it makes up part of you, and you pass it on to your own children, and it's the cycle. It is true.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm glad we got to speak about him because he sounded amazing. But I was also thinking for you that
thank you.
To get married and then be on honeymoon and then lose your dad and then have a baby the next year and then start Strictly, which becomes part of the next nearly 20 years. All of that stuff is a lot. That's a very intense period of time.
It sounds a lot of highs and lows. True. Yeah. An awful lot happened. Yeah, 2003, 2004. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's a lot. And it's funny, isn't it, when we look back on that bit when we've got our first baby, especially, and life has gone whoop, and then you think, how did I have the energy to do all those things?
Really do. Through.
Yeah, when you're feeling all at sea. True.
And actually, well, you've done it 5 times.
Yes, well, that's, a level of, as I say, enthusiasm that's not for everybody.
It's amazing. Yeah, you have the most energy.
And also, I think you've seen not just me being terrified on live telly, but my mum, because I think you and Vernon presented It Takes Two that my mum did as a duet show.
Oh, yes.
She was with Alexandra O'Neill. And I was in the crowd.
Alexandra O'Neill.
Oh, my. I actually, you know what I said Strictly was the most terrifying thing? Paso Doble week particularly. But one level up from that was the nerves I felt being in the crowd watching my mum about to do something. Oh, wow. I thought I was going to be sick, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because I couldn't help her. I couldn't do anything.
No.
It was, she was just after the, she was coming up first, and I think there was, like, I don't know, VT showing or something. Mm-hmm. And I could hear her practicing on the stage over and over her opening line. And I just was thinking, please don't let this go wrong. Oh, my goodness. Even now, you can see I'm, like, clutching my face, like the trauma.
Yeah, you're singing with Alexandra O'Neill. Oh, my gosh, she's a soul legend, no pressure.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, oh, wow. Was she terrified? Had she told you she was nervous?
Yes, she was. Oh, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. So nervous.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's next level.
But she did well.
She did, actually. She got through it. She didn't go out that week. One of the judges. Was it the drummer from Police? Was it Stuart Copeland that was one of the judges?
Yes.
He was really horrible about her. So if I ever
see him. He wasn't.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I will never think.
That's so mean. And he was like a pussycat backstage.
He was an elephant.
The sweetest.
Yeah, I get it.
I get it. I totally get it. Stuart, how could you?
He compared her to like a cat singing or something really awful.
He did not.
Not acceptable behaviour, Stuart.
What? There was I thinking he was Mr. Nice Guy.
Maybe in real life.
Oh, no. That's so mean.
Nah,
I bet she was nothing like a cat.
Nothing like a cat.
I bet she... No.
No, she was a lovely, lovely singer. She's got a nice voice. What was the other thing else? So at the moment, what else is happening in your world at the moment? Obviously, you've got your new book, but what happens in this period of time before you hit summer and then it Strictly starts and then it's Christmas?
Well, I've been so busy with my book. Oh, my goodness. That's been like a year in the making. And for it finally to come out, it's like, it's here.
Yeah, that's a big
deal. It was like giving birth again. It's like a third child. I swear. It was like painful. It was painful because I had to like put myself under house arrest to finish it. Do you know what I mean? Because otherwise, constantly distracted. It took me about 6 months to come up with a name. The rest of the time, what now? Oh gosh, lots really. I've got a business as well. I've got a swimwear company with my best friend Gail, and we have built up from the ground, from the kitchen table, a sort of swimwear resort line, and we're really proud of it. It's called Naya Beach, and we launched it in a pandemic. Didn't know it was going to be, obviously, didn't know travel was going to be illegal when we brought out our range of swimsuits. You can buy it to wear in your backyard because now you can't go on holiday. It launched like literally summer 2020. Bad timing, but despite that, the fact that holidays were then illegal, it's gone on to sort of great success. We've gone from strength to strength, and we're really proud of it. So that takes quite a lot of my time because I'm now a genuine businesswoman. Like I literally, you know, we are emailing each other within the company from 5:30 in the morning. The emails start till about 10 at night. I tend to not look at my emails after 9. I refuse.
That's very good. Good discipline.
I just won't take any work emails from 9 o'clock because otherwise that stops me sleeping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It gets in the way of like rest, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't even look at my emails past that time. I work on that a lot because when you've got a business, it doesn't sleep.
Mm.
It doesn't work without you. It doesn't sleep. And someone always needs an answer from you. But it's brilliant because you get to be creative and design stuff. And, you know, I can see a swatch of fabric on a bag down. I'm walking down Portobello Road on a Saturday at the vintage market. And I'll see a fabric swatch and I'll go, oh, that would be amazing on a caftan. You know, so you get inspiration everywhere and you get to be creative and have this wonderful input, which is, that's exciting. You know, it's quite exciting. Having worked, you know, in that fashion world for so many years, I did before. when I got into television. So it sort of feels like it's come full circle. So that's fun. Takes a lot of time. Sound like I'm moaning, but actually it's brilliant because doing it's
no, no, I'm sitting here
fantastic
very
feedback and we're proud of it. So that keeps me quite busy. And then everything else with life, I don't know, I'll be doing meetings. I might do a voiceover. I might do a photo shoot. I might do whatever. Mum stuff. Lots of mum stuff. In my mind, I'm just always mum. You know, it's the mum list that's on my on my phone diary. Everything, like every hour, I've got a mum chore, book haircut, book dentist, make sure new shoes for this, for, you know, new football shoes for whatever. Phoebe's got into football. So, you know, the mum list is what keeps me mostly busy, and sort of work. Work is timed around that.
I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, before I let you go, I just want to say thank you because we first met a really long time ago. I think we met in something like, it might have been like 99, maybe.
No way.
Something like that, because it was when I was modelling, actually. We met as a fanzine type of thing. And you were doing a photo shoot, not as a modelling thing, you were being interviewed. You were like the celebrity part of it. And I was doing a little modelling shoot for them. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember really nice to me. And I was, I must have been like, I think I was about 19, 20. And as you know, modelling can be quite a lonely world, actually.
Yeah.
And quite often you don't really often get like spoken to directly like that often. That was my experience anyway. It would be a kind of a, right, you're here, turn up, put these things on, do this, and then you can leave kind of thing. And it was, I just felt like sometimes a little bit invisible within the clothes.
Yes.
But you took time to be kind to me, and I really appreciate that. And I've never forgotten
how could
it.
I not, you little sweetheart? How could I not? I used to give talks to the new faces when I was modelling, and I was a bit long in the tooth. I've been doing it for like 10 years at that point. And I would do talks every week at my model agency to the new girls who just sort of started, and they didn't, they were quite naive and they didn't know how to sort of go on the castings and how to sort of, get from A to B and how to be when they traveled the world and what was. So I would just give them sort of, I give them little chats and I do these talks, and I still meet girls now who are ladies now. And they're like, I remember when you did that chat on the Friday, and I remember that you said this, and it was brilliant because it really helped when I was traveling the world and I was lonely and da, 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 da. I find myself in a place where no one's bugging. And so that was, I love that because, you've got to share the love and the compassion because you're out there on your own, aren't you, in that world quite a lot, like you say, and it's quite scary at times.
Definitely. That's
Paris,
brilliant. You
just
did
me
that.
Me and my plan de Paris, cantering the streets, often lost in the suburbs somewhere. So it was quite. So it's quite nice sharing the advice when I sort of lived it and done it, because I got it.
That's actually really, really kind of you and really supportive because I think getting that sort of mentoring is something that's quite often absent in those experiences. So I bet all those girls do remember all that. That's brilliant. That's really lovely. Well, I started very impressed, actually. You've got so much going on, and I can't believe you've managed to create a successful swimwear brand that started in summer 2020. I think that should be somewhere on the label, like when you look inside, like if it can work for summer 2020, it can work for always.
Exactly.
That's, like, amazing.
That was the ultimate test. Thank you, honey. Well, I just love chatting to you. I think you are the biggest inspiration because you're a mum of five. I always say if I had one more child, I'm not sure I'd ever be able to leave the house. Again, respect to you. You're spinning those plates, honey.
If you have five kids, you just start a podcast so you get to lock yourself in a small room.
Perfect.
That's the clue. And actually, I love the fact the whole time we've been talking, you've got that massive Iron Man, the invincible Man. Look at that.
Yeah.
Just you should put
your boys would like that.
Put a little cut out of your face on his head. Boom. That's you. The birth
Iron
of
Woman.
The power.
We're all Wonder Woman, right? Wearing that little invisible cape.
Exactly.
God bless us all.
Have a lovely time, Tess. Thank you so much.
Thanks, love.
It's
lovely talking to you.
Lots of love. See you soon. Oh, thank you so much to Tess for speaking to me. And she does actually look incredible. So I think I probably do need to incorporate some of her health and well-being tips in my life. It's funny, I used to always not really have too much time for things like facials, and actually I've got really bad with, I keep active, but I'm not doing like exercise classes like I used to, but I'm wondering if maybe now that I'm like my mid-40s, maybe it's a good idea to get back into something a bit more regular.
What would you recommend? I'm sort of thinking about maybe doing like weight training type things, just to kind of like build a bit more strength. No, I do feel quite strong though. I have to lift a four-year-old quite often. I feel quite strong, but I don't know. I know a lot of people where their backs go and that kind of thing. I don't really want to be stuck. I want to be able to do my jumping about on stage. That's what I want. I've got my first festival tomorrow. I'm off to Brighton to sing for a little festival called Foodies Fest, which is really cute. I've done them before. And it's a bit of a sort of a new, what's the word? It's a bit of a, not milestone, that's too strong, but it's a bit of a thing to be doing the first festival because I know I'll be doing them all year until sort of autumn, really. And I can't quite believe we've got around to that already. I do think festival season is a bit longer now than it used to be when I first started gigging. But even so, it's like, oh, okay, here we go. And then, yeah, I've got lots of lovely festivals coming up. So if you come along to one I'm doing, then give me a wave. I'll give you one back. And, yeah, hopefully the sun will shine. That'd be nice. But in the meantime, have a really, really lovely week. And thank you as ever for finding me here. Sorry about the strange singing at the beginning, but I was just in that kind of mood. And any minute now, I'm going to be located and I'm going to have to go and feed all these extra young boys I have in the house. They're actually being really sweet. I think it's going to be smooth sailing. I feel like I should have a little add-on bit I record tomorrow where I tell you how little sleep I've had because of the sleepover. But so far, I'm feeling quietly optimistic. I will promise to give you a little bit of a catch-up as to whether my optimism was misplaced or not. All right, look after yourself and I'll speak to you soon. Thank you so much for tuning in. I love talking to you and just having a bit of a ramble chat with you. So thanks very much. All right, speak soon. Look after yourself. See you soon. Bye, bye, bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.